What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
Mark Latham. Mark Latham, leader of One Nation in New South Wales. He joins me this afternoon. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks, Brent. Always good to be with you.
Likewise, good to have you. And boy, oh boy, let's talk about the weather briefly. How good is this weather that we've been receiving for the last couple of weeks? Since I know it's cool, but wow, the sunshine. Fantastic autumn weather, Mark.
It has. It's been lovely, although I've got to say here in the middle of Sydney, because State Parliament is sitting today, the cloud cover's come in and it feels like we'll get a bit of rain later on. So it could be ending, Brent, but that always happens. But yeah, while it's been evident, it's been beautiful.
Mark, let's start, if we can, this afternoon about talking about Mrs. Claire Nallan, the 95-year-old. She sadly, peacefully died last night. And my goodness me, hasn't this been a complete stuff-up? Police have now charged the police officer, but that was last night before the lady had passed away. I have been on air since midday, so I don't know whether the charges have been upgraded. There was talk that they would be. Up until midday, they hadn't been, and I've got the monitor on in the studio, and I haven't seen any news stories come through with breaking news that they've changed those charges. But in any case, he's off at the moment, but he is on full pay, and I think he faces court in July 5, early July.
Yeah, the matter's before the courts, and it's very serious. It's a tragic circumstance, and the family must be devastated by what's happened. I suppose it's a measure of the importance of the police work, isn't it? That you make one mistake, it can have horrific consequences. So while this has been a black mark against the New South Wales police reputation, I think it highlights just how important, critically important their work is in the community day by day. And we shouldn't forget all the matters where, you know, they discharge their duties with bravery and honour. But in this particular instance, it's been a complete tragic disaster. It's hard to believe that a 95-year-old woman needed to be tasered in a nursing home at 4 a.m. There must have been other ways, one would have thought, to subdue her, given that she had a knife. So there'll be obviously a full court case about this. We'll look at the details. Here in the State Parliament on Tuesday, there was an attempt to have the video footage of the tasering released. The opposition wanted to have it out there. There's been some criticism of the government that they weren't transparent enough, along with the police commissioner, Karen Webb. But I think on balance, given that charges seem to be pending, it would have been wrong to release the video. I think the commissioner was wise to stay as low-key as possible until all the facts were known, and the facts are evident in the fact that the police officer's been charged and the matter goes to the court on a very serious charge. So once you get politics in these matters, it never ends well. And sadly for the family involved, the tragic circumstances are completely devastating for them.
These police inquiries, though, they're taking far too long. It was came to light as a result of this terrible incident. What, 195? I think 81 of those 195 inquiries have actually been finalised. The balance is still waiting, and have been waiting in some cases since 2017. It just seems to take forever and ever to get an answer here.
Well, I suppose these things can be complex and they need to be considered in a careful way. I know in the State Parliament there's an interesting array of politicians who want to, you know, do in the police and campaign against them. And I think we need to be cautious about that. Certainly compared to 30 years ago, the police have got a lot more accountability, scrutiny, transparent review processes in place now. The police, you know, back in the day, I suppose the RAN government, in the 1980s, the police really were a law unto themselves. But now, if the wrong thing happens, in this case with criminal charges or other review processes, the spotlight is always on the police. But, you know, the Greens, for instance, don't like the police because of sniffer dogs and crackdown on drugs. Some of the other smaller parties don't like the harassment of shooters and over-policing of shooter licences. We've got a cannabis MP here now who's obviously wanting to legalise that particular drug. So the police, you know, can get caught in the middle of political controversies. I see that most of the time in the state parliament. But my attitude is that 99% of the time they do a really good job. In the 1% where there's a huge mistake, and that's what we're talking about here in this Cooma nursing home, well, the full weight of the law has got to go against the law officers.
The Chinese government is probably the biggest winner from Joe Biden's decision to pull out of his trip to Australia and Papua New Guinea. Of course, it forced the cancellation of the Quad Summit in Sydney. The leaders still got together at the G7, but I suppose it's not the same. And Papua New Guinea, of course, they were absolutely looking to Joe Biden, looking forward to Joe Biden coming and visiting them, because he would have been the first US president to ever visit PNG.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a measure of how influential China's trying to be in our part of the world, our immediate neighbourhood, that Biden would be going there, worried that Chinese money would be buying off influence in the PNG political system. So, you know, that's the seriousness of it. I know he cancelled the trip because of the debt crisis in the United States, but it sends a message, doesn't it, that if the American president feels the need to go to Papua New Guinea, which is not a high-profile country on the international stage, China has got its tentacles out there trying to buy influence, buy off infrastructure, buy off politicians right around the South Pacific and beyond. So it's a worrying time in that regard.
Let's talk power bills. Goodness me, power bills. We talk power bills all the time here. Now, power bills are expected to jump by 25% for thousands of Australians under a new electricity price set by the Energy Regulator. The Australian Energy Regulator Chair was on radio this morning, I think it was, Claire Savage, said that prices would have surged by up to 50% if the government hadn't intervened. Residential customers are in any way going to see prices go up between, well, 20 and 25% from the 1st of July, depending on where you live. Claire Savage did add today that some households will be eligible for energy rebates co-funded by state and federal governments, although she at the time was unable to advise on how many that would affect. Obviously, this was announced in the budget a couple of weeks ago, and Anthony Albanese went to the election offering a reduction of, you know, $275 on our power bills. For many middle-class Australia, they will receive no reduction whatsoever, only an increase of between 20 and 25% on their power bills.
Well, there's a lot in it, Brent. I suppose the first reaction is that the power prices are going up way in excess of the rate of inflation, and they're adding to the cost of living crisis. I've seen some of the lineups in Western Sydney recently, people getting food parcels and free clothing, try and keep their kids warm in winter. There is a cost of living crisis out there that the middle to high income earners aren't necessarily feeling, but a lot of Australians are doing it incredibly tough. And the increase in electricity prices seems to coincide with the rise of the renewable system. Now, yeah, the left wing of politics will say renewables are the cheapest form of electricity. But what they don't factor in are the extra costs of the transmission wires to wire up to the western part of New South Wales with solar and wind farms. The transmission system primarily has been along the east coast of Australia. We're the only country in the world that has a thing called rewiring the nation, where we're building a whole new electricity grid. Well, someone's got to pay for that. And the cost estimates are dreadful. There's other news today that the New South Wales government is now admitting that the cost of its central west Arana renewable energy zone has increased by 500%, and the overall cost for these renewable energy zones in New South Wales has blown out to $10 billion. Well, someone's got to pay for it, and the electricity companies pay for it in the initial instance and then pass it on to consumers. So renewables don't seem to be the cheapest form of electricity, because when you factor in the transmission system costs and the backup power of pumped hydro, batteries, gas peaking plants, renewables are probably the most expensive form of electricity generation. It's passed on to consumers, and that's why the bills are going up. They went up 30% last year. We find out today 25%. This is going to really hurt a lot of lower income Australians, and I suppose pensioners, who in the coming winter months just won't turn on their heating.
That is just a sad state of affairs when we live in a country whereby, as you just say, pensioners, there'll be a percentage of pensioners that just won't turn on the heating because they can't afford the electricity bills. It seems as though politicians are not able to sort these problems out. Is it the responsibility of them? I mean, we've got no one else to blame. We, as, you know, the people that unfortunately are continually putting up with these enormous increases. I mean, we talk about inflation and then we talk about the cost of power going up. I mean, it just is ridiculous, these 25 and 30% increases on power.
Well, politicians caused the problem, Brent, so they should be blamed. And there was always a trick. There was always a trick in this because Australia used to have the cheapest and most reliable electricity grid in the world. That's no longer the case. Because there was a mad rush from Matt Keane, Chris Bowen, Albanese, even in the Morrison government, to go to 100% renewables. And the extra costs in building a whole new transmission grid, all the backup power that's needed for when the sun's not shining, the wind's not blowing, well, the consumers are paying that. And the politicians, there was always a trick here. When they started talking about climate change in the time of the Rudd government, so what's that, about 15 years ago, the trick was to say that, oh, well, we've got plenty of sunshine, we've got plenty of wind, the power will be very cheap. They forgot to say, honestly, to the Australian people that we're going to have to build a whole new transmission wire system, rewire the entire nation, and have all these backup forms of power, of which one is Snowy 2.0. What's looming is a $20 billion white elephant over budget and over time. No one's going to build any pumped hydro to back up the system in the future because of the complete disaster of Malcolm Turnbull's Snowy 2.0. So there was always a trick of politicians saying we can save the planet here from climate change and it won't cost the consumers anything. Well, boy, those chickens are now coming home to roost, and it's sad and it's dangerous.
Have you got to go?
No. They're bells to say we're coming back to sit at 2 o'clock. They won't go for very much longer. We've got an ad break while the bells are ringing.
How about we do that?
Yep.
Well done. We're talking to the leader of One Nation in New South Wales, Mark Latham. The bells are ringing. We'll take a break. We'll come back, continue our chat shortly. The New South Wales Liberal Party has slammed, no pun intended there, Mark, slammed the Premier Chris Minns' decision to sign a $16 million deal with the UFC to stage 3 mega fight cards over the next 4 years in Sydney. They've argued the money should be spent elsewhere, Mark.
Well, sporting events do cost money, particularly if they're enjoyed by a lot of people. I mean, the Liberal Party in government spent billions on football stadiums like Allianz and Combank, the money they're giving to the Penrith Panthers, they gave money for rugby league centres of excellence, the Tigers and so forth. So they spent a lot of money on sport themselves. But the argument I find curious is their deputy leader, Natalie Ward, saying the UFC is associated with domestic violence. Well, that sport I mentioned, rugby league football, I Googled the other day NRL domestic violence and the headline came up 66 scandals. So if you're going to rub out sporting events because some of the people who've played the code have been involved in domestic violence, there'll barely be any sport left for people to watch. So it's sort of guilt by association to say that the UFC is going to foster domestic violence in Sydney. And anyway, if any of these fighters are a bad character, it's not a state government responsibility. The federal government will deny them a visa through the Department of Immigration. The one guy Natalie Ward's been picking on, Dana White, the president of the UFC, it's true, on New Year's Eve last year in Mexico, he and his wife subsequently apologised. They said they were as drunk as a skunk, both of them, but he said something to the wife. She slapped him across the face and he slapped back. Now that's unacceptable, and White went out and said, no one should support me on social media, because the truth is, if a woman hits you, you just got to cop it on the chin, literally. And they both apologised. So no one was charged, no one was convicted. I don't think you can deny fans here of the UFC. I mean, it's a brutal sport, but geez, it's got popularity. And for those who want to watch it, you can't deny them that opportunity in Sydney, which has missed out in the past because of what happened with Dana White. So, you know, I think the Liberal Party here is up the wrong tree.
There is a documentary on one of the streaming services at the moment. I don't know whether I'm not a UFC fan, but I did watch it with this Conor McGregor. As you say, it is just a vicious sport, but boy, oh boy, do they work hard. Are they committed? And, mate, do they earn some money when they win or lose?
Well, they do, and the pubs will be full watching it on TV, and young people in particular seem to flock to it. You know, anyone who thinks boxing is brutal, at least boxing's got padded gloves and some rules to it. But UFC, it's you know, these are sort of cage matches where anything goes. And it is brutal, but they're all volunteers for it. As you say, Brent, they're very well paid for it. And they've got huge fans right around the world. And now Sydney gets its chance to have a look at them firsthand.
I see that you've got that the New South Wales government is actually working with One Nation. And there was a question mark whether that would happen after the last election result with some of the things that Chris Minns said. Tell us more.
Yeah, they said they wouldn't work with us because of my controversy with Alex Greenwich. We haven't noticed any change here. There's obviously a change of government, but no change in the role we play constructively in the chamber. So I can report for anyone who supports One Nation, we're still on the job and getting things done. And a number of government ministers are looking to us to play a constructive role in the upper house, and that's what we're trying to do. So I don't know if that reflects a lack of authority of Chris Minns, that his ministers just ignored him. But if that's what they're doing, we're happy to see that outcome.
Well, you know, you've been back in Parliament now for a couple of weeks. How is the new Parliament going? What sort of changes are you seeing with the different numbers in the House?
Well, it's a different set of faces, and a new government brings a different style. I suppose the main style of the Minns government so far is reviews. They review everything. They're not making many strong, definitive decisions in the key areas. They're having more reviews than a rugby league referee referring to the bunker. Every second day there's a new review, and the one that was announced today is a complete review of renewable energy policy. The Energy Minister, Penny Sharp, in our chamber in question time, said they've put out for an eight-week review by an energy consultant, Cameron O'Reilly. So they can't have a lot of confidence in these renewable energy zones. The costs are blown out. Electricity prices are going through the roof. Labor voted for all of this 2 years ago, 180 times, when Matt Keane was rushing through his renewable energy plan. They can't have a lot of confidence. It's now under complete review over the next 8 weeks, and the document will be published at the end of that process. So that's the main thing. I've never seen a government launch so many reviews in the big policy areas, and energy is the latest one where everything looks like it's on the table.
Sad thing is, most people just want cheaper energy. They don't care about these reviews. They just want a better result in reference to their back pocket, don't they?
Well, the review's important because it'll also look at the closure of Eraring Power Station. The minister's saying you need to keep it open to avoid blackouts. How do you do that without robbing the taxpayer blind? You know, obviously you can't get a time tunnel and go back and go back to the old electricity system when the prices were so cheap and the product was so reliable. But they've got to change direction. There's no doubt that with the rising prices and the threat of blackouts, a mad rush to renewables is not working. It's not in the economic or public interest that I can see. So hopefully this review will point to, at a minimum, slowing down the transition. Like they talk about transition to a clean energy economy over 10 years. Just with the electricity grid, it's like trying to turn the Queen Mary on a 5-cent piece. You just can't do it. So the smartest thing to do would be to either halt the transition or say, well, look, it can't be done in 10 years. We've got to slow things down over 30 or 40 years so the prices don't go up so high and that the lights stay on.
Yeah. We lost Tina Turner overnight. Any good memories of you and Tina Turner's music? She was 83.
Yeah, well, as a rugby league fan, that's simply the best commercial, sort of defined rugby league in the 80s and gave it a increased public platform. There's a great story that circulates that she was filming it in London and the head of the NRL, John Quayle at the time, said, oh, you're lucky woman, Tina, you'll be filming this with one of our best-looking rugby league players, Andrew Ettinghausen, who did look like a male model, and someone like Wayne Pearce, who was as fit as. But on that day, for some reason, Gavin Miller turned up, and Gavin Miller was certainly no oil painter. He had his nose smashed right across his face. He's a pretty ugly dude. And Tina said, well, if this is the best-looking bloke, I'd hate to see the ugly ones. And she's well-remembered by league fans for that reason. Her music was iconic. And I've got to say, Brent, when I saw that news, you know, it's a little bit like the passing of the Queen. You don't expect it could ever happen. She was sort of timeless. Mm. She was regarded as the, you know, the rocking grandma. Always looked 20 years younger than she actually was, and now she's gone at age 83, which is a dreadful loss and I think quite a shock.
Yes, she in a recent interview said she wanted to be remembered as the Queen of Rock and Roll. I think she will be. She will be remembered as the Queen of Rock and Roll. I've got to let you go. You better get back to work. The bells will be ringing very shortly.
Yep.
So thank you for taking the time.
We're back into it in the chamber. Thanks, Brent. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Mark. See you, mate. Bye-bye.